Shalom. Welcome to the podcast, Ask the Rabbi. I am Rabbi Leonid Feldman, and I'm the host of this podcast. Thank you for listening. This is going to be episode 92. And the title of this episode is The Only Thing Necessary for the Triumph of Evil. The title of this episode is the first part of a very famous statement which numerous leaders have often used in their speeches. For example, President John F. Kennedy quoted this phrase a lot in his speeches. While widely attributed to the Irish philosopher Edmund Burke, historical research has shown that it was actually John Stuart Mill who said it in his inaugural address in the British Parliament in 1867. The full text of this statement is the following. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. Its core message is very clear. Wrongdoing wins when people who know right from wrong choose to stay silent and do nothing. As I record this episode, the Jewish people are approaching the saddest day in our calendar, the ninth day of the month of Av, Tisha B'Av in Hebrew. I devoted an entire episode to this important date exactly 3 years ago. However, I feel that especially now, it is extremely important for all of us to remember and to understand why millions of Jews are going to fast and mourn on the 9th of Av while sitting on the floor in synagogues. According to tradition, the destruction of both the first temple and the second temple in Jerusalem took place on the 9th of Av. Both destructions were horrible tragedies. But the second destruction by the Romans in the year 70 of Common Era fundamentally and brutally transformed Jewish history. Jerusalem was burned to the ground. Over 2.5 million Jews died. Over 1 million Jews were exiled to all parts of the Roman Empire. Over 100,000 Jews were sold as slaves, and thousands were tortured and killed in gladiator games and pagan celebrations in the Colosseum that all of us admire today when we visit Rome. This was the beginning of our homelessness, which continued for almost 2,000 years, until 1948, when the State of Israel was created. In addition to the two destructions of Jerusalem, numerous other major calamities also took place on Tisha B'Av. The Bar Kokhba revolt was crushed by the Romans in the year 135, killing over 500,000 Jewish civilians. The expulsion from England in 1290 took place on Tisha B'Av. The first crusade officially commenced on the 9th of Av, 1096, killing 10,000 Jews in its first month alone. The Jews were expelled from France in 1306 on Tisha B'Av. The expulsion from Spain in 1492 also happened on the 9th of Av. World War I began on the ninth day of the month of Av in August of 1914. And as we know, the aftermath led to the Second World War. On August 2nd, 1941, which was Tisha B'Av, SS commander Heinrich Himmler formally received approval from the Nazi Party for the final solution. As a result, the Holocaust began, during which 1/3 of the world's Jewish population perished. In 1942, the mass deportation of Jews from the Warsaw Ghetto to Treblinka began on that day. The bombing of the Jewish Community Center in Buenos Aires in 1994, which killed 85 people and injured 300, took place on the 9th of Av. I remember visiting the remnants of that Jewish community center in Buenos Aires. The trauma is still very fresh. Even until today, they did not accuse or indicted any of the people who were involved in that horrible event. This terrible list has continued into many more recent events. In addition to the rituals of mourning on the 9th of Av, weddings and other celebrations are forbidden during the 3 weeks before Tisha B'Av, and many Jews abstain from eating meat, drinking wine, and many other things from the 1st of Av until the 9th. It is a generally accepted fact that the destruction of Jerusalem and the Second Holy Temple was the most tragic event in our history until the Holocaust. An obvious and extremely important question is why? Why did this calamity happen? The simple and the easy answer is that the Roman Empire was the superpower of that time, and the tiny Jewish state didn't have a chance fighting it. However, the rabbis in the Talmud, instead of blaming the Romans, say that we brought this disaster upon ourselves. They say that the temple was destroyed because of sinat chinam, baseless hatred, or hatred for no reason. It's a very famous expression, sinat chinam. Basically, Jews hated each other, and this was the result of that hatred. However, do people really hate each other for no reason? Obviously, very often personal disputes, jealousies, competition are involved, which are rooted deep within the human psyche. However, sometimes the reasons for conflicts are much deeper and complex. Historians describe life in Jerusalem during the first century of Common Era as dominated by clashes, hostility, polarization, and rupture of relations between different factions. The vital issue of Jerusalem's relationship to Rome was at the center of that crisis, and it had a direct connection to the future of the Jewish people. Some serious questions were being asked. Should the Jews fully accept Rome's authority? Should they wage outright rebellion? Or should they perhaps try to find some kind of compromise for coexistence? Those were the existential questions that split our people into passionate adversaries. So this was not exactly causeless hatred. So what is sinat chinam? What did the rabbis mean when they used this term? So in this episode, I want to study with you the most famous text in the Talmud pertaining to the destruction of Jerusalem in the year 70 of Common Era. It's a very famous story. Perhaps many of you are familiar with this. It is found in Tractate Gittin 55b. This tractate deals primarily with personal issues, especially divorce. Gittin, get today, is we use that word. It's a divorce. But it is symbolic that the discussion of the exile of the Jewish people from the land of Israel takes place in this tractate. Perhaps this is a hint that what happened at that point between God and our people was actually divorce. I will now read this Talmudic text in English. And you can find it anywhere online. Again, it's Gittin, G-I-T-T-I-N, page 55b, like as in boy. So this is the text. Jerusalem was destroyed on account of Kamtsa and Bar Kamtsa. There was a man whose friend was named Kamtsa, whose enemy was named Bar Kamtsa. He made a large feast and said to his servant, "Go, bring me my friend Kamtsa." The servant went and mistakenly brought him his enemy Bar Kamtsa. The host of the banquet found Bar Kamtsa sitting at the feast. He came over and said to him, "You're my enemy. What are you doing here? Get up and leave." Bar Kamtsa said to him, "Since I'm already here, let me stay, and I will pay for whatever I eat and drink." The host said to him, "No, you must leave." Bar Kamtsa said to him, "I will pay for half of the feast. Just let me stay." The host said to him, "No, get out." At this point, Bar Kamtsa said, "I will pay for the whole feast." The host responded, "No, you must leave." He then grabbed Bar Kamtsa by his hand, stood him up, and took him out. We'll stop here, which is the first part of the story. Let us review what we just read. So many questions should be and could be raised at this point. First of all, who is at fault here? The servant made an innocent mistake, since the two names are very similar. And by the way, we do not know why these two men hated each other. At what point could the story have been changed dramatically? Should the other guests have done anything? If so, why didn't they? There is a word for these people. It's called bystanders. And we're very familiar after the Holocaust with that word. And the fact is, the question should be asked, are any of us guilty of being bystanders? Also, why did Bar Kamtsa accept the invitation to this banquet? I guess he was probably very surprised by it, but he may have seen this as a chance for reconciliation and was happy to attend this banquet. But why was he willing to spend so much money in order not to be forced to leave? Well, this is obvious, I think, to all of us. To avoid embarrassment and humiliation in front of everybody there. And I am assuming these were very important and prominent citizens of Jerusalem. What about the host? Was his behavior justified? Interestingly, the name of the host is never mentioned. There must be a reason for that. Think about this. After all, he's a central character, right? What is the reason that we're never told what his name was? Okay, let's continue with the text. So he was just kicked out of this beautiful banquet, right? I continue. At that moment, Bar Kamtsa said to himself, since the sages were sitting there and did not protest the actions of the host, it means that they were content with what he did. Therefore, I will go and inform against them to the Roman governor of the region. He went and said to the head of the Roman administration, "The Jews are rebelling against you." Now, Arkamtsa is angry. I mean, we stop there with the text. I continue now. Arkamtsa is angry not only with the host of the banquet, but also with the rabbis who were present there. So as a result, he decided to inform on them to the enemy of the Jews, who were besieging Jerusalem already, the Romans. And the result was new Roman edicts and persecutions, which obviously affected Arkamtsa and his family as much as everybody else. But he doesn't care at this point. His hatred blinds him. He is now willing to betray his people, to become a traitor. And what about the rabbis at the banquet? Why didn't the rabbis speak up on his behalf when he was publicly humiliated? Jewish law forbids in strongest terms public humiliation of another person. In fact, the rabbis compare this sin to basically murder when you do this publicly like this. We can assume that the host is an affluent and politically powerful man. The rabbis probably didn't want to jeopardize their relationship with someone who can contribute large sums to their academies and schools. They were willing to compromise their values. On the other hand, it is possible that the host and his guests considered Arkamtsa's views not only wrong and dangerous, but they saw Arkamtsa as despicable, inexcusable, and even evil. In the language of today, among the company at the party, Arkamtsa had been canceled. He was so beyond the pale that he was not allowed to be in their presence. He was simply not one of them. As a result, the rabbis did nothing. Nobody stood up for him. Arkamtsa's slander was accepted by the Roman authorities, and the war between the Jews and the Romans began. The Talmud continues with several additional painful stories with the same message. I now want to look with you at the last story in this Talmudic discussion dealing with the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple. It is a very sad story. At first glance, it seems to have nothing to do with this horrible tragedy in Jewish history. And yet, our sages, for whatever reason, decided to include it in this sequence of stories. And there are quite a few stories. It goes on page after page after page. Interestingly, it is also the very last story included in the long answer to the most crucial question the rabbis tried to answer here. Why did we lose our independence, our freedom, and became homeless, vulnerable, and helpless? This last story is found in the same tractate of the Talmud, Gittin, on page 58a. I'm reading now. There was an incident involving a certain man who set his eyes on his master's wife. He was a carpenter's apprentice. One time, his master needed to borrow some money, and his apprentice said to him, "Send your wife to me, and I will lend her the money." He sent his wife to him, and the apprentice stayed with her for 3 days. He then went back to his master's home, I guess, before she did. And the master said to him, "Where is my wife, whom I sent to you?" The apprentice says to him, "I sent her back immediately, but I heard that the youth, some guys there, hooligans, abused and raped her on the way." The master asked his apprentice, "What shall I do?" The apprentice said to him, "If you listen to my advice, divorce her." He said to him, "But her ketubah, a marriage contract, is large. I do not have the money to pay it." The apprentice said to him, "I will lend you the money, and you will give her payment of her marriage contract." I guess the apprentice was much wealthier than the master. The master at that point arose and divorced her. And the apprentice went and married her. When the time came that the debt was due, and he did not have the means with which to repay it, the apprentice said to his master, "Come and work off your debt with me." And they, the apprentice and his wife, would sit and eat and drink, while he, the woman's first husband, would stand over them and serve them with their drinks. Tears would drop from his eyes and fall into their cups. And at that time, the Jewish people's sentence was sealed. End of the story. And this is the end of the entire cycle of stories in which rabbis give us many different stories of trying to find the answer to the main question. How did Jews deserve this horrible tragedy? Now, many questions may be asked about this particular story. For example, what quality of marriage was there between the master and his wife? Why did his wife remain with the apprentice for 3 days? Why didn't the master go right away to find out what happened to his wife? And besides, why didn't he pick up the money from the apprentice by himself in the first place instead of sending her? I'm not going to try to analyze this particular story, but in any case, I think it is clear to everybody why this story is included in the Talmudic discussion of the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple. I also hope that it is obvious what this story has in common with the story about Bar Kamsa. In both stories, there is no crime. No crime is mentioned. The real crime is silence. Nobody stood up for Bar Kamsa, and nobody intervened on behalf of the master in the second story. And we can assume that that story became well known all over the city. The society that tolerates these kinds of behavior is a sick society. This is what these stories try to show us. Remember the title of this episode: The Only Thing Necessary, right? We have read now about two Jews who hated each other. And because of that hatred, our people lost their homeland and were scattered to the four corners of the world. And today, we're still dealing with the consequences of that hatred between two men. We had been dreaming about returning to our homeland for 2,000 years. Every year, at the end of Seder, And at the end of Yom Kippur, we shout, next year in Jerusalem. Finally, miraculously, our dream became a reality. And yet, we must constantly justify and defend our right to have a home, to have a state of our own. I want to make one more point. Both Israel and America are going through a painful and dangerous crisis right now. Millions of people do not speak to each other because of political disagreements. This is literally destroying numerous families and friendships, relationships. Of course, the most important issues of the day must be debated vigorously. And there are times when principles must take precedence over compromise. However, the lesson of the Kamsa and Bar Kamsa story is that we cannot let those arguments prevent us from seeing the basic humanity of those who disagree with us. Perhaps this explains the similarity of the names. Think about this. Kamsa, the friend of the host, and Bar Kamsa, his enemy. The resemblance implies that there was something common to these two men, that in some ways, they were the same. This story teaches that when we not only disagree with the opinions of others, but actually negate and cancel their humanity, we are on a path that leads to destruction. The names Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, which are so similar, remind us that even when we are on opposite sides of an issue, there is still so much that we share. As the electoral campaigns begin right now in Israel, everybody on the, all the commentators, the analysts are predicting viciousness and cruelty in the ads and in the speeches of different candidates and parties. Let us hope and pray that especially now, when we're still basically in the middle of a war, our people will not go to the lowest possible level of debates. We simply cannot afford to lose Jerusalem and our independence again. Let all of us remember, we Jews are bound together forever. We'll stop here, and I want to thank you again for listening. I'm very interested, as always, in your responses and your reactions and your comments, questions, disagreements. Please write to me. My email address is rableonid, one word, rableonid @gmail.com. Talk to you soon. Shalom.